20 years ago, when I was a college student and first started attending Riverview, we met in the Kellogg Center at Michigan State, and I remember Pastor Paul Denherter, one of the pastors at the time, who's still a pastor here at Riverview today, walked my wife and I out to our car. And I remember we walked through the parking ramp, we stopped in our car, and we had a little conversation, and then I said to Paul, I said, well, where did you park? And he pointed to the very back of the parking ramp, and he said, I'm back there. And I thought, you know, for a pastor, you're not very smart. If you came early enough, you would get a better parking spot. And what I learned over time attending Riverview was that both Paul and Steve parked all the way in the very back of the Kellogg Center every single week so that other people could park closer. And there was just something about that that was striking to me as a young man. Over time, I began to see that this was something that throughout Riverview, many of the not just the leaders, but the longtime people who had attended Riverview would do that very same thing. And it was refreshing to me because, you know, I had been to churches before where the pastor's name was in lights on the sign out front. And sometimes there was a pastor parking only sign right in the very first parking spot. And I get the reason. I'm not slamming churches to do that. I get the reason they do that. It's all about honor. But there was just something for me that was refreshing about these guys parking in the back of the parking ramp. Over time, I began to see this just play out all throughout the church. And if I was to put a word to that piece of DNA, it was having the heart of a servant. There was just this servant's heart attitude amongst the people here around Riverview. Even Mark, the pastor who was in the video that we just showed, Mark won't talk about himself this way, so I will. He is a bigwig in the corporate world. In the corporate healthcare field, he's a big deal, and yet he volunteers his services here at Riverview as a pastor. He works behind the scenes. This great guy who's got this public presence out in the workforce works behind the scenes serving us here, helping us with our operations and our systems. We've got another volunteer pastor here whose full-time job is he is the director of Collegiate Church Network, which is a whole bunch of college churches across the nation. And here at Riverview, he volunteers his time to help. To me, that servant's heart is an amazing, amazing thing. And our prayer is that as we grow, as we get more complex, that we never lose that piece of our DNA because it is a beautiful picture of who Jesus is. Our mission at Riverview is to make sacrificial followers of Jesus who grow, serve, and go. And it's right there in the middle of our mission statement that we want to make sacrificial followers of Jesus who serve. Because Jesus is the chief servant, and so because of him, we serve. In Matthew 20, Jesus said, as the Son of Man, that's him, came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. This is one of those verses we've heard in the church over time, but we lose the impact of it. This is Jesus who is God. We talked about this last week, the fact that the God of the universe would place humanity onto his divinity, add that to his divinity, and come here to become one of us. He came. That alone is amazing. But not only did he come, but his strategy wasn't to come jump onto the throne in Jerusalem and rule. His strategy to lead us, to save us, was to serve. To serve even to the point of death. I mean, the guy lived a sinless life. And at the end of that sinless life, he could have jumped onto the throne in Jerusalem and ruled the world. And yet, he continued to serve. He died on the cross for our sins. He was buried on the third day, raised again, ascended into heaven. Well, what is he doing right now? He's seated at the right hand of God, and he is pleading our case to God. He continues to serve. He serves, so we serve. I mean, he's ultimately the guy who, like, if you've seen in TVs and movies, there's always that character who says, take my place, I'll take their place, I'll take me instead. It was, you know, in the TV show Revolution recently, it was in Muppets Take Manhattan. I mean, all these great shows, there's that character. That character's based on Jesus who says, take me instead. It's the ultimate service. Like Jesus said in the book of John, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for our friends. And so we look to the example of Jesus. But the problem mentally for us with Jesus is that he's God. So we say, of course, he's able to do all of that because he's God. And so we kind of use that as an excuse to not live that kind of life ourselves, to not be that kind of servant ourselves. We forget the fact that he's also 100% human through the power of the Holy Spirit. So let's not look at Jesus' life and example. Today, let's just look at his teaching, his specific teaching to his followers about how they were to live their lives, starting in Luke 6. In Luke 6, Jesus says, "And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them." Now, you may have memorized this in the King James. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We've all heard that. It's the golden rule. It's that thing we all want to teach our kids, but our kids would be much better at if we actually lived it. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, the reason this is so hard is that we are people who like to categorize. And so we place people in buckets. And the one bucket is the people that we are going to treat this way. We will do unto these people as we would want them to do unto us. They sit in this bucket, but there's another whole bucket of people. And they don't deserve to be treated that way. And maybe it's because we don't know them, or maybe we know them too well. And they've just treated us poorly over time. We've gotten too comfortable. We're not going to treat them like that anymore. But, and you know, mostly it's because we don't like the way they've treated us. But Jesus says, listen, there's no buckets. There's no categories. There's no list. There's no excuses. We, as his followers, we are to treat others the way we would want to be treated, period. He starts with us. Imagine how this would change everything if we, in every situation, flipped the tables and said, if I was in that person's shoes, how would I want to be treated? And then we just do that. How would that change your marriage if you treated your spouse that way? A lot of times with our spouse, we're like, nah, I know them the best. They know me the best. We don't have to be like this to each other. We just, you know, we'd be my normal self. What about your kids? A lot of times with our kids, we're like, well, they're my kids. I can say whatever I want. They got to listen. They're not going anywhere. What about with those people closest to you? I mean, we are to be people who do this in every situation, and it's a game changer. It's a game changer when we begin to truly act like this, but don't misinterpret what Jesus is saying. Sometimes it's really easy to misinterpret this, and let me show you why. My wife is amazing, and part of what makes my wife so amazing is she is the complete opposite of me. I am a old, balding white guy. She is a hot Korean woman who gets better looking every year. We'll just start there. That becomes a metaphor of all of my entire marriage. Because we are so different in so many ways. We're different in temperament. We're different in personality. We're different in love languages. My wife's love language is acts of service. Simply serve her. Do something. And so when my wife comes along and says, hey, will you empty the dishwasher? Sometimes we can misinterpret what that means and say, well, okay, if I was in her shoes, what would I want? Well, my love languages are physical touch and words of affirmation. So she doesn't really want me to empty the dishwasher. She wants a kiss and a compliment. So I'm just going to do that. See, that's an extreme example, but it's what we do. We read our personality onto other people, but we need to become students of people. And we begin to learn, how is this person wired? If I was in their shoes and I was them with their temperament, how would I want to be treated? And that's how we treat others. It's a key to a servant's heart when you take yourself and you rank yourself below that other person. And we serve them. We figure out how do they want to be served, and we serve them that way. Jesus lived a life like this. In Luke 12, he told a story, and he said, the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time? And so what Jesus is saying is there's this guy, he's got this big house, lots of servants, everybody needs to get fed. Who's he going to put in charge of making sure everybody gets fed? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. In other words, the person he's going to put in charge is the one that's actually doing it. When he shows up, the guy's feeding people. He's like, you know what? I'm putting you in charge of feeding people. This is a basic employment principle, a basic how to deal with your parents principle, a basic schooling principle. It's this. When your boss, your parent, your teacher, professor shows up and you're actually doing what you're supposed to be doing, you will do well in life. When you show up in class and pencils are flying, or you show up at work and you are taking a nap under your desk, this is not how to get ahead in a company. This is just a basic principle. He says, truly I say to you, he will even set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. Kind of an extreme way to treat your employees, but the point is taken, Jesus. And that servant who knew his master's will but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required, and from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. Now, these are packed several verses from a lot of points, but I have to hit a couple points that don't really have to do with my message as much, because once we read them, we freak out. And the first one is when he says, the one who did not know but did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Well, what does that mean? Well, we say this in our country as well. We say that ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? You're speeding. You don't know what the speed limit is. That's not an excuse to be going 80 into 55. It's the same basic principle. And where this applies in a very specific, important way is when it comes to the gospel. Not knowing the gospel is not an excuse. Now, some people, they look at that and they say, how can God hold someone responsible to something that they don't know? Well, it's just kind of the law of the land. You're responsible for gravity, whether or not you believe in gravity or know about gravity. You're responsible to it. And so this is, instead of having it be something that terrifies us and makes us angry at God, it should be something that motivates us to tell more people about Jesus. When we look at the greater Lansing area, we know that there are 465,000 people in this area. It motivates us to tell them about Jesus. It's the reason we want to start 5 more venues in 5 years in the Lansing area, because there are a lot of people who need to hear the gospel. It's why we're planting churches all over the state, all over the country, and it's why we're going to plant churches around the world. In fact, Rick Warren, who's pastor of Saddleback Church in California, author of Purpose Driven Life, I was at a conference this week and heard him speak. And at the tail end of his message, he challenged all the pastors there. He said, listen, there are so many, he gave the exact number, I don't remember what it was, thousands of people groups in the world that not only do they not have a church, they don't even have a Bible in their language. He said, would each local church here commit to reaching one of those people groups and translating the Bible into their language? So we're in. In fact, we've been working on this for a little while now. We've got a couple in our church that's actually going through training right now to learn how to do linguistics, and they're going to plant a church in an unreached people group. Why? Because people need to hear the gospel. Another thing about this passage is Jesus is talking directly to the Jewish leaders who had been entrusted with this coming kingdom of God, and they were busy here rejecting him as king. And the big point he was making to them is managing what you've been given. And what they've been entrusted with was this message of the kingdom, and they were missing it. And the application for us in this remains the same as theirs. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required, and from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. What does this mean? Well, every one of us has been given everything that we have. Someone down through history, I don't know who, came up with this little thing that people say all the time, and it's really easy to remember, that every one of us has been given time, talents, and treasure. We've all been given these things, and we all have a different amount of each one of these things. It differs with each one of us. And a servant's heart is somebody who keeps the master's vision and values in focus in how they use these things they've been stewarded with. And so a follower of Jesus keeps Jesus's focus, his vision, his values, and we take our time, and we take our talent, and we take our treasure, and we push it to achieving Jesus's goals. That's what it's like to be a good steward. Our time. We don't know how much time we have. In the last week, the last couple days, the last 2 days, I got an email from someone whose child overdosed and passed away. And a friend of mine texted me last night to say they were taking his dad off of a ventilator, and his dad was probably passed away over the course of the night. We don't know. We all have a limited amount of time, and the question is, how are you going to use it? Are you going to leverage it for you? Are you going to leverage it for your gain, for your glory? Or are you going to leverage it for the master? Taking some of your time and your entire life and pointing it toward him. There's so many ways to do this. Use your unique position in your place of work, where you're working, where you're employed, where you're going to school, and use that to build relationships with people to tell them about Jesus. I mean, you could serve in the church. I mean, we have so many needs within this church. We need people to plug in. Our RIV Kids ministry is a great idea. If you've never seen the kids thing going on down the other side of the building, it's crazy. It's crazy in a great way. It's awesome to see what God is doing and these kids learning about Jesus. And one perfect example we've got in there is on Saturday nights right now, we need more help because our kids program is a little bit understaffed on Saturday nights. We need some people who'd be willing to step in and serve there because there have been times where we've had to empty classrooms and push classrooms together because we don't have enough teachers on Saturday night. And we're going to be, as this Sunday grows more and more, encouraging people to check out Saturday night. And so we're going to need help out there. And so if you want to just hang out with kids once a month and then you hang out with them on Saturday night, you're going to have to give up some of your time. Then you can come to church on Sunday morning. And I've seen a lot of people even this weekend who have already done that. Give time. We all have different talents. Pastor Joe Testa, who was on the video earlier, Joe is a gifted evangelist. And so he is so good at telling people about Jesus, which is what makes him so perfect to work on the campus of Michigan State. For some people, that's a real hard thing to do. For him, it just flows so easily. And you are wired different than him. We're all wired differently. What are your unique talents that you can use? Find the place to use them for the master. Treasure. We're all given a certain amount of money over the course of our lives. Is it just about you? Is it just about your kids? Is it just about the things you can buy? Or can you leverage that for Jesus? And it's not just about giving to Riverview. Hey, if you ever feel like we're twisting your arm in giving here, just be sacrificially generous and give somewhere else. But we are to leverage our treasure for him. And see, what happens is we often pay lip service to all of these. We say, yes, I follow Jesus. Yes, he's the master of my life. Yes, I serve him. But in our time and our talent and our treasure, if we were to take a step back and honestly look, we would realize that we serve ourselves. And that he would be like that teacher one day who walks into the classroom when the pencil is flying the day he comes back. How are we doing at being good stewards? You know, in the book of Matthew, in the early chapters, Jesus is presenting this idea of what his kingdom looks like to the Jews. And they ultimately reject it because they don't want this kingdom that he's offering. But listen to some of his description of what his kingdom would look like. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take any oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black, unless you get men's hair closed up. Yeah, but then we could still tell. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now, what Jesus is talking about is deals that you make with another person. With a handshake, with a phone call, with an email, with a contract, a deal that you make. And the law had set up the system to protect people who were under contract. And part of the system was this. It was, if you make a deal with another person, then you're actually including God in that deal. And then some people would just swear by God. I mean, we do that flippantly. We say, oh, I swear to God. You know, when you say that, what you're saying is, I 100% guarantee what I'm about to say is true, and that if I am wrong or I don't follow through, I'm not accountable to you but to God. You really want to say that? And so Jesus simplifies the whole formula. He says, this is the easiest way to do contracts. If you say yes, mean it. Make it yes. If you say no, mean it. Make it no. It should be that simple with a follower of him. The master is the master of truth. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. He is the truth. And so when we speak the truth, we are in his page. So when we say yes, we better mean yes. When we say no, we better mean no. I just bought a car this week, did most of the negotiation by voice on the phone. And there's turned out to be some little issues with the car. And I have appreciated that guy that I dealt with because he is making everything right, even though we've mostly just talked on the phone. I can't help but wonder if the guy's a Christ follower. What does this have to do with serving? It has everything to do with serving. Because when our master is the master of truth, we need to be trustworthy people. We need to be people who are counted on. We need to be people that know. People know when we say we're going to do something, we are going to do it. And so when we get married and we take a vow before God, we're making a vow. And we keep it. When we say that I promise to be faithful to you and you alone until death do us part, how dare we break that vow with pornography or with adultery or with sleeping around or with any whatever you want to put on that list. How dare we? Made a vow. We're to be people who don't overcommit to things. You don't commit to something, you're not going to follow through on it. Now, don't use that as an excuse not to get married. But think about your whole life. Think through whether you're going to make a commitment before you make the commitment so that you can be somebody who has a yes that is a yes and a no that is a no. It's tough. And here's the tough question. If I was to go to your boss, spouse, kids, parents, clients, customers, neighbors, professors, teachers, and I was to simply ask them about you, what's their reputation? When they say yes, do they mean it? When they say no, do they mean it? What would the answer be? Because a servant of Jesus keeps his master's values in mind, and we let our yes be yes and our no be no. May I have the permission to lay the smack down? Let me sip coffee while you think about it. One of the issues that we face at Riverview is people making commitments and not following through on them. There'll be people who volunteer to do ministry and they'll say, yes, I'll be there. What they really mean is I'll probably be there. And so there are times where we don't have coffee because there's somebody who's not here to get coffee. So we got to get some coffee people and everybody's shaking because they need their coffee. And we have to get other people to brew the coffee. There are times where kids ministry classrooms will just not have a teacher because the teacher just won't show up. There are times where tech team members don't show up. We are to make our yes, yes, our no, no. That's what it means to follow Jesus. He continues on and continues to describe his kingdom. And says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn him to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Now, if you've been around the church, you've heard this one. But what does this mean? Well, simply, the law had set up an ability for someone to get justice without overdoing it. So someone punches you in the face, you lose a tooth, you have to take their tooth out. Simple. They modernize it. Some guy loses control of his car, slides through your yard, takes out your mailbox. He gets to repair the yard and repair the mailbox. You don't get to sue him for $1 million for the damages you had emotionally to your yard. That's being a greedy American. So the law just said simply, if someone did this to you, just have them pay you back. It's that simple. Tooth for tooth. Eye for eye. Mailbox for mailbox. It's easy. And so Jesus kind of turns the temperature in this whole thing up. And he says, don't even resist the one who does evil. The person who is evil. The evil person. What does he mean by that? Well, that word resist is a legal term. He's continuing the theme on of letting your yes be yes and your no be no. He's continuing that theme. And now he's using this legal term. Resist means basically don't sue this person. He gives the example. He says, if you are slapped in the face, let them slap the other side. Now, we often ask the question, does that mean my kindergartner, if he gets hit in the face, he needs to stand there and be pummeled? I get that question all the time. That's not what he's talking about. A slap in the face is like an insult. It's like somebody taking a glove and slapping you in the face. You are insulted? Let someone insult you. Someone insults you on Facebook? Do not retaliate. Let them. That's hard. I've had a bunch of people ask me about that, just that example. Really? Facebook? No, no, just we don't retaliate. They slap our face. We just stand there and they slap the other side. He goes on and says, if someone takes your tunic, they take you to court, they take your tunic, give them your shirt also. Well, this is also a legal thing. Because what would happen is if you were being dragged before court, they would take your tunic, which is the one piece of clothing everybody had. It was probably your most expensive piece of clothing. You'd wear it every day. And they would hold it as collateral until the court case was done to see whether they needed to sell it or give it to the guy to pay for the mailbox you ran over. So Jesus is saying, I want you to go above board and give them the coat, give them your shirt, literally the shirt off your back, to show them that you are going to follow through on your commitment and make right what you need to make right. Are we people who go that far above and beyond in our business, in our marriage, in our relationship with people, that we will go that far to make it right? And then he says, if a Roman soldier asks you to carry his gear for 1 mile, carry it for two. Now, this is a great, great illustration. Because in the Roman Empire, they knew how to make you know that you were under their subjugation without really destroying your life. And what they said is, if at any point a Roman soldier tells you to pick up his gear and carry it a mile, you had to carry it a mile. It didn't matter if it was your wedding day, you're in the dress in the back with the flowers. Roman soldier says, will you carry my gear for a mile? You got to drop your flowers, say, I'll be right back, carry it for a mile, come back, get married. You got homework to do, you're playing video games, you're in the middle of a work project, you got to drop it all, carry the gear a mile. And Jesus says, if someone tells you to carry it a mile, you carry it too. What does that mean? Well, put yourself in their shoes. Roman soldier tells you to carry his gear for a mile. You're in the middle of mowing your lawn. What do you do? Grumble, 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 grumble. Carry his stuff for a mile. Throw it down after precisely a mile. Flip him off. Go back to the lawn. I mean, this is how you feel about that. And the Roman soldier, he's in charge of that first mile. And what Jesus is saying is, he may be in charge of the first mile. You're in charge of the second. And so when it comes to that second mile, you just keep carrying his gear for one more mile. It will shock the daylights out of him. Because the first mile is required of you. The second is not. And in so many of our relationships, there are requirements on us to go a mile. Think about your marriage. Think about your school. Think about your classes. Think about your work. I mean, there's just stuff required of you. There's stuff required of all of us. You can probably think of a bunch of examples right now of things that are required of you. A Christ follower doesn't grumble his way through the first mile. A Christ follower cheerfully goes too. I was thinking about my marriage. And I was using the example earlier about my emptying dishes for my wife. And as I was thinking through this message, I was thinking, I'm terrible with the second mile. See, for my wife, if she was to ask me to unload the dishwasher, I'll do that. That's the first mile. That's required of me. And so I grumble, 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 put all the dishes away. And while I'm doing it, she better be paying attention and noticing so I get a kiss and a compliment through this thing. And then if she doesn't do that, I don't know why I even unloaded them in the first place. Or she's not going to give me a kiss and a compliment. And so this is how the first mile works. And I began thinking, what does the second mile look like? Well, it's not loading the dishwasher because she says I do that wrong. And when I load it, then she has to unload it twice because she has to unload it and put it back in. But a second mile would be trying as best as I can to find it whenever it has been run through its cycle and empty it without her asking or noticing or any of those things, whether she says anything to me or not. And I am not doing this. I'm not saying I won't do this. I'm saying I'm not currently doing this. And I am convicted that my attitude toward my wife has been terrible in this. I suck at the second mile. How about you? A Christ follower is a person who walks that second mile. It's being willing to go and cheerfully do that. So, do you see the heart of a servant in this? Can you imagine what would just happen even in the Lansing area alone if we all began to have that servant's heart? If we thought through every single relationship, every person we run into, the guy at the oil change place who is just doing his job but he's trying to upsell us. If every single person we ran into, we had the heart, I am here to serve this person. I am here to rank myself below this person. How would that change everything? I mean, remember what Jesus said? Matthew 20, we read this already. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, to give his life as a ransom for many. This is what Jesus did. He didn't come to serve. He came to be served. We act like we should be served by everybody. In fact, this verse comes out of a section where he's talking to the leaders, the men who would one day lead the church. And this is what he says to them. He says, Jesus called them to him and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. And these are used in negative ways. It shall not be so among you. For whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus uses himself as an example, says, listen, I came to do this, your turn. As a follower of me, a sacrificial follower of Jesus, you are to serve. You are to lay down your life for other people. It's a leadership issue. Often, young men will come to me and say, hey, I'd like to be a pastor someday. And I tell them, without fail, go serve in the nursery. Change a poopy diaper. And by the way, I was just told this morning that I got to stop saying that because men are not allowed to change poopy diapers at our church as part of our policy protecting children, some stuff like that. But still, you can serve in the nursery. Get out there, serve, 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 serve. That's the pathway to leadership. And guess what? When you become a leader, you know what you get to do? You get to serve more.